no to school meetings because I enjoy the work of school, but I can prove I push it off a number of years by being busy and not being able to make it work. And no, I didn't feel like you were bothering me, but glad to come and share here with you in the school. Discipline that earns respect. Taught school a number of years and served on the board, or at least sat along with board meetings a number of years as well, and seen quite a few different kinds of teachers and classrooms. One of the things that I've noticed is I've sometimes seen a strict teacher who had everything in order in their classroom. It looked like, at least, but they didn't have respect. And then I've seen some very, I would call them loose teachers, who would have liked to just talk to their students and never have to do any correction. They were very kind and laid back. And some of them didn't have respect either. But I've seen some teachers with good order and high respect. I'm not sure how many loose teachers I could point to, ones who left things really go, that really had respect. In fact, it was always interesting to me as an upper grade teacher to listen to upper graders once they got to 8th, 9th, or 10th grade, listen to them talking about their former years of schooling. And it's amazing how many times they looked with disfavor on classrooms that they came through that and just about anything would go, and how frustrated they were with it. Oh, at the time, they helped to carry on. They added to the problem. They had their share in it, and they didn't smile when a teacher tried to tighten things up a little. But in the end, as they matured, they realized that wasn't a good learning experience. So we're going to talk about discipline that earns respect. First of all, an introduction, I'd like to just mention four things that I think children need. And I know there's many books written today about, you know, what people need and the basic needs of people. And I know there's much emphasis on this modern psychology that we're like, you know, a cup that needs filled up. And so children need this. But there are some things that God intended for children to experience in life, I believe. One of those is that they need to know that they are loved. Children need to know that they are loved by their parents and by the authorities in their life. They're loved. Children need to know that they are safe. That they are safe. There's a certain amount of rest. That they know they are safe. They need to know that they have value. Even the student who is the most handicapped or struggles the most with whatever needs to know that every soul is valuable. They also need to know that they are not free to do just whatever they want. That's an element that is missing in America tonight and around the world. See, discipline is something that our world really doesn't want to think about. Tonight, the fact that you're here tells me that you know something about self-discipline that you didn't learn by your parents letting you be lazy or your school teachers letting you do whatever you want. Because if you did whatever you wanted tonight, you'd have stayed home by the fireplace with hot chocolate in your hand and popcorn. Discipline. Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6, very familiar verse. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Train up a child. Tonight, this word discipline, often we think about a correction event. And I want to think about this in a broader sense. I want to think about discipline in the sense of the order and directives and procedures of school, the expectations for learning, and then, of course, the correction that's needed at time. But it's not just about how do you punish a child that they'll still respect you. Because if you only ever think about the punishment moment, And don't have some other foundational things in there. You can't punish and gain their respect if there's not some other things done beforehand. So it's a broad picture tonight. And God expects us to train up our children. Tonight's topic, we will not go to many scriptures at all. But the goal of tonight's topic is to look at some of the foundational things and some of the practical ways that this works out. There's many, there's much teaching in the scripture from Proverbs. Our brother read from Proverbs 1. There's child training messages from time to time. We just want to think about subject of discipline and what should we think about and how shall we view it and what shall we do and how shall we work our way through it that earns respect. Now, so the question that I want to ask tonight is, so what is the goal of teaching with discipline? Why do we want discipline in our classrooms? The board wants it. Parents want it. Teachers hopefully want it. You don't teach school very long until you realize some value of this order and structure and discipline. It's actually good for us to have to help children, because God finishes growing us up when he gives us nixy, naughty children to discipline. Suddenly we see ourselves, and it helps us to grow up as well. But what is the goal of teaching with discipline? Is it to have a fun time? Is the goal of teaching with discipline to have happy children, children who love school? Is the goal of teaching with discipline to lessen my frustrations and work as a teacher? So the classroom's not messy. So there's not, it's everybody sits straight, is quiet, works hard, fears getting out of line, and my day goes well. Is that the goal of teaching with discipline? Is it to please the school board and ensure that we get hired again? Is it so students remember me as their best teacher? What is the goal of teaching with discipline? What are we trying to accomplish? Now, it would really be interesting to have you get out a piece of paper and write down what you think the goal should be. I'm not going to make you do that tonight. But you've probably been trying to think about an answer to that question. What is the goal of teaching with discipline? It's a very, very, it's much broader than any one of those statements. Some of those statements are in this whole picture, but that's not the totality of what is the goal. The goal, I believe, tonight is to have students' hearts turned toward God and their lives shaped closer to his image. It's part of helping students to look into the face of God and have something more of his image than they would have without discipline. And as that begins to happen, then students are equipped to serve God where he calls them in life. They're equipped. They're in school with discipline. They're being equipped to serve God in life where he calls them with the least amount of regrets and bad exposure. Tonight, if our children are going to public school, there's horrible things happening, horrible exposures, horrible teaching things. Even the world is alarmed. You read all the time about school board meetings where community comes in. And I just read one the other day where a small boy stood up and read from a book. I don't know if it was from the library or for one of his textbooks. Read some explicit material right out of his textbook. And everybody cringed. It seemed so wrong for this little fella to be reading those words. It's in their textbooks. We're so glad tonight that we can be delivered from that. And while school takes a lot of work, a lot of sacrifice, a lot of money, a lot of time, It's a blessing to have our children being prepared to serve God with the least amount of regrets. And discipline helps to cut back some of those wrong exposures and regrets and things that go with a person for life and tend to pull them back toward evil. Well, teaching with discipline, discipline that earns respect. Let's talk about some classroom foundations. Let's talk about some things that we're going to talk specifically about the classroom, and teachers are somewhat in focus. But one of the things that happens is, you know, that the tables are really turned against the teacher. They're really turned against the school to be able to teach children with respect and keep the respect of children. If the first place or the only place that these children face discipline is at school, it is almost impossible to teach children with discipline and have a high level of respect. It is almost impossible if that's the only place they face discipline. Now, we try some of that with children's ministry and summer Bible schools, and we bring children in from the community, but you can only do a little, just a little, and not much. And so while we talk about discipline in the classroom, parents, as you listen in, you can understand some things that a teacher needs to have, but you can also understand some things that you can do at home to help prepare a child to fit into that kind of environment. And so the first foundation that I'd like to talk about is simply honoring the Word of God and God's authority. It's one of the foundational things. Truth must be followed and obeyed. And so the reason it's wrong to lie in school is because God said we're to be truthful. And many, many principles, many, many things from the Word. That's why we don't do that. That's why we dare not cheat, because there's a God and He has a law. And so we must honor the Word of God and His authority. Righteousness is defined by the Bible, not by the teacher, but by the Bible. In fact, especially in upper grades, it's important to help students understand this concept that as a teacher, you are under the authority of God. I remember one time correcting an older boy, and he was a little slow at maturing and connecting dots in life, and he was naughty. And I was talking to him about the problems that he had. And I asked him, I said, what do you think God will do to me if I don't correct you for this problem? Do you realize one of us is getting whooped? Either you're getting whooped from me. I didn't give him a spanking, but I used that term to mean corrected. Either you're getting whooped from me or I'm getting whooped from God. Which way will it be? And he looked at me like he never thought about the fact that I would have to answer to God if I let him go on in wickedness. And I would get some reprimand from God. I don't know how much of that sunk in. I like to think that it was a thought that began, it was a seed thought. It was something that began taking root in his life to realize that this whole idea of authority and the things that we want in our school is way bigger than just it's the way I want the classroom. It's what God wants for our lives. It's not me as a teacher versus you as a student. No, it's something much bigger than that. There's a God, and that's why we do these things. And we want to please God in all this. Yes, we want children should please their parents and please their school teachers. But all of that is under the authority of God, and when they please those authorities, they please God. And it's preparation for them as they learn to obey parents and learn to obey school teachers. It's preparation for them to be accountable directly to God and obey God in adult life. That's all part of that growing up. And so this foundation of honoring God, this foundation in the classroom of it is God and His Word. That's why we have devotions. That's why we need to talk about these things. And when there's infractions, when there's bad speech or whatever, it's right to teach that the Word of God has this standard. Now, we little people, we need to be careful that we're not doing child evangelism. But But the reason I must help you not to use smutty speech is because God doesn't want that. It's the standard from God. The second classroom foundation that's important to have is friendliness. It's a teacher with positive interest in their student. Teachers with positive interest in their students. A friendliness, a good relationship, good social skills. Someone who is inviting for the children to come into the classroom, not someone who is grumpy and not sure if you'll get a good morning from them this morning or whatever. It needs to be, if we're going to have a classroom that's disciplined, that brings respect, we're going to have a teacher with a positive interest in their students. And then there will be mutual trust and openness. And they will bring out the best in students. I remember hearing a story of a teacher who it seemed like as he taught, one of his goals was to show the students how smart he was and how dumb they were. And I don't need to tell you, he didn't have any respect. He had the least amount of respect that I've ever seen a teacher have. And he didn't understand why. And he could hardly see himself. And you know what? He only taught 1 year and quit. But his problems didn't end. He had troubles in his business. You know why? He had troubles at church. You know why? Well, teachers with a positive interest in their students is a foundation, something that needs to be there. Number three, another foundation is clearly defined schedule, procedures, and rules. Now, there is something like too many rules, pages and pages of rules, and there is something like overdoing that. Most of us don't have that trouble, but some perfectionists will tend to have everything spelled out exactly how it's going to be. Tends to make a legalistic type of classroom, but there is need for some understanding of what we do and do not do here. Things like quietness. When shall it be quiet? And when may they talk? How do they walk out of the classroom? How do they line up for drinking at the fountain? Or how do we dismiss for recess? If you have halls in the building, how do you pass through the hall? How do you hand in your papers? If you get your lessons done, do they put them back in a stacker or do they hold on to them till the next day? Some clearly defined ways of this is how we do it. And it brings a certain amount of rest when students learn the patterns of what we do. And then they know that they're doing well when they accomplish it. Many students like the security of knowing that this is what's expected of me and I did it. And so they feel at rest. If things change, one day it's this, one day it's that, it brings chaos. And so clearly defined things like schedule and procedures. You know, so I wrote it this way. Some basic sit still, study quiet, get your work done procedures. Through, how does it work? What will we do or will we not do? And then having clearly defined that, then expect it and keep it. And when it's broken, don't let it go. Something must be done. Sometimes teachers don't know what they want in the classroom. Sometimes we think, well, we'll just kind of do it as we go. And a certain amount of that you can get by with, but there's a certain level of need for some structure. We're going to bring about respect. A fourth basic foundation is good communication with parents. Good communication with parents. We should ask them questions to see how they feel about things or how they see things. Start early and speak often. Keep that line of communication open. Remember the place of compliments. Even the naughtiest little student in your classroom who vexes you to no end does at least one thing right and probably has more than one good trait that you could compliment the student for and the parents. It's a little nerve-wracking for parents to come to a school meeting knowing there's probably a long laundry list of things that's wrong with little Susie. If there's that many things wrong, hopefully you were talking to them as this was going along. So it's not a surprise that suddenly here, number one is this, number two is that, number three is that, number four is that, and your student's not going to pass unless they do thus and thus. And it's the first I knew about this. Good communication with parents. Because I believe that one of the foundations of having respect from our students lies in having respect from the patrons. If you lose the respect of the patrons, you will lose the respect of the students. Students are not dumb. They know the level of respect that mom and dad have. That's a big challenge on all directions for us as parents. But communicate with parents. It's wonderful for our children to grow up in church settings and school settings, knowing that the preachers and the school teachers and our parents are all one and the same in what we want for our lives. They're all looking out for our good. They're all pulling together. They're all harmonizing. That's wonderful. If that begins to crack and somehow children are growing up realizing that, wait, some of these don't get along and they begin facing frustrations. They begin learning how to pit the one against the other, or all kinds of things happen. But good communication. Children should grow up knowing that, yes, dad and mom will hear them when they speak at home. They'll probably talk to the teachers. In fact, they probably have talked to the teacher sometimes when I didn't know it. And the teacher has talked to my parents. And I can't pull the wool over my teacher's eyes or my parents' eyes, because they talk and they connect. We'll bring respect. Number five, another foundational thing, and this heads toward the subject of when something was wrong, when there was a disobedience. One of the foundational things that we need is to work with the facts, not a tattletale message alone. Now, this gets to be a little bit delicate, because sometimes as a teacher, we didn't see something happen. Child comes and tells us something. What do you do with that? Well, you need to hear. But there are some children who love the reward of being the informant who gets the other one in trouble. You need to cut that off by hearing and giving little evidence of what you will do with it, and very little evidence of where you went with it. You don't owe that child an explanation of what you will do with this and how you will handle it. You owe them a listening ear. You owe them support. You owe them that they feel safe if something's happening that's not safe. They need to feel loved. But they didn't hire you as a teacher. You don't answer to them. You hear them. And there's a delicate balance there of hearing and then taking care of it. And taking care of it in a way that doesn't fuel the tattletale problem. I believe it's best for teachers to use those things to say, okay, I will watch. I heard if this student got by with it once, they will do it again. And I can maybe see them do it and have the evidence myself in my hand and then deal with it firsthand, not because somebody said so. Depending on the problem, maybe you have to do something with it. The nature of the problem, that those things always vary. But sometimes it can just be a tip for you to watch closer and catch them in the act, and then deal with it on that. And oftentimes it brings about much more respect. I often would tell teachers, and this is probably a crude little phrase, but I would often tell teachers, wait till you have the cat in the bag to correct. Because if you're not exactly sure, you don't know, and there's still a lot of loose pieces, and you're beginning to correct, and you don't have everything, a little bit of time sometimes is important. One of the fast ways to lose respect is to discipline someone wrongfully or to be reactionary. Sometimes a little time is better. In fact, sometimes missing one event and catching the next one is better than thinking you caught the first one and being misdirected and making a botch of it. And that takes some mature, sometimes maybe even working with a school board or principal. So what shall I do with this? I remember I had a boy in eighth grade who was lazy. He didn't like to finish his homework. And I had multiple evidences of that. And there are different times I had them when they were finished with their papers, they would put them in a stack or at the back of the room. And at the end of the day, I would collect them. I'd go to collect them and his math paper isn't in there. And they would often see me sitting at my desk grading papers. And right beside my desk was a waste can. Well, one time I asked this boy, well, we had ceiling fans in there too. And so when ceiling fans are on in the summertime, they tend to lift papers and scoot them aside. And one time I went after this boy for a math paper and he said, well, yeah, I did it. Handed it in. Don't you have it? Oh, I don't have it. Well, he don't know. I must have lost it. Me, lost it. I'm the teacher. Well, I didn't tell him that. But yeah, he said, I see papers float off your desk and into the waste can. So what am I going to do? How could I for sure say I didn't lose it in the waste can? I was just about sure he didn't do it, but I didn't know. I didn't make a whole lot over it. But that evening after everybody was gone and nobody was watching, I moved the waste can from beside my desk to back along the wall where papers don't easily float into the waste can. And he never caught on because 2 days later, he was missing a paper. And I went after him. He said, you still have trouble with papers going off your desk and into the waste can. I said, really? The waste can isn't there anymore. Wait until you have the cat in the bag. Moving a little too soon and without evidence and just by, I'm pretty certain he didn't do that first math paper. But you know what? It's all right. He'll get caught on the second time around or whatever. Work with facts. Another foundational thing is loving but firm discipline. Loving but firm discipline. So wrongs need to be called into account and cleared, not left hanging, not dragged on, I remember being in school, and I don't know if you do this here or not, but I'm just going to say it the way it was, but this teacher had a black mark chart. She was a pretty strict teacher. She taught grades 1 through 8. And she had 32 students when I was in first grade. And I learned more in first grade with one teacher with 32 students than I did in second and third grade with a teacher who only had first, second, and third. This teacher had law and order, and everybody was afraid of her. It was a one-room classroom, and the ante room was behind. It was a hardwood floor. Restrooms were out there. And she frequently paddled students, and she paddled them in that room, and it echoed like crazy. We all sat in here, and we learned the fear of the teacher. I was scared to go to school, but I learned. I think I respected her. She had a black mark chart. And when you got 6 black marks, you got whipped. And you got black marks if you had less than 70%. You got black marks if you disobeyed her rules. You got black marks if you didn't hand in a paper. I don't know. It was a whole list of things. It was easy to get black marks. And they just hung on the chart. You got 1, you got 2, you got 3. There was no erasing them. You got 4, and you are good for 2 weeks solid. You got 5, and you were good for 3 weeks, and you got 6, and you got spanked. Well, I don't recommend that because of there's a certain amount of fear factor that goes with that. I believe that if something needs corrected, it ought to be corrected now, and. The idea of a collection and then clearing that collection just doesn't seem to bring about the best in children. When children do wrong, it ought to be cleared. They should not be sitting there fearing for the next 2 weeks what's going to happen with one more mark. I'm not saying it's wrong. It's wrong to use some marks of something, but for that level, that equals a spanking and no way to back any of them off. I mean, even if you were good for 3 weeks solid, you didn't get to take one off. You just, if you did bad, it was on your record and there it stood. And I wish I could tell you that that brought about the fear of God in me that I would never get a black mark with God. That's not quite the way it worked. because I knew that this is something different than the way God works with loving kindness. But loving, firm discipline, or a consistency that we don't do this in our classroom, and here's how we clear it. One of the things that happens sometimes is, so there's different levels, and we need to think about the different levels. What does it call for? Sometimes it calls for a rebuke, but sometimes it calls for a punishment or a price. One of the snares that happens is ladies are feeling oriented, and so a rebuke feels to them like that probably really scared a little boy. He probably shuddered in his boots, but men and boys don't feel the same way about a rebuke many times. Some do if they have a tender conscience. But some little boys would rather have a rebuke. Inside they smile, as long as they don't have to lose recess or some privilege, away they go, and it didn't hardly hurt. Loving, firm discipline that calls the disobedience into account and that measures out something rightful, something, some kind of clearing of it, and then release. Loving but firm discipline. Maybe some chaos is in your classroom, some looseness, and you wonder what to do. I often would tell teachers, take the worst things and pull them back. Start with the worst, the biggest offenses, and begin to deal with them. It's amazing what one spanking in a classroom does when students learn. Well, we don't announce it in the classroom, but somehow the word gets around sometimes. Whoa, watch out. It's amazing what correcting a larger issue will do in putting authority in the rest of your voice when you say stop it. And it's amazing if nothing, no correction ever happens like that, how much your voice doesn't count. And so loving, firm discipline that takes these things into account. Well, seventh foundational thing is the teacher in charge and aware of what's going on. You need to be present and alert. You need to have eyes in the back of your head, as it were. We visited a public school one time, and I watched the teacher in third grade writing on a whiteboard behind his back with his marker like this. He was putting notes on the whiteboard while he was talking to his class. You know why he did that? He was in charge and he was watching. I can't even be in. I can hardly spell on a whiteboard and write nice anymore on a whiteboard looking at it, let alone behind my back. You got to be in charge. You got to know what's going on. You got to be with them at recess. You got to be there. Take the lead. Be present. Number eight, teachers need to be pursuing the wishes of the board and the parents. No personal agenda. No hidden motive to change these people or turn this around or make this school something like you grew up in. It's not going to work. You'll lose respect really, really fast. Every church community has a certain, I don't know what you want to call it, but a certain level of what they expect and what they're used to and what they want. Now, sometimes the board says, look, we want to up this. And the board, you should do the teachers a favor and define if you want something changed, if they should work on it. But teachers, you try to go places that the board and the parents aren't interested in going, you'll make shipwreck. No working to prove someone wrong or show the board a better way. No, no, no. Teachers pursuing the wishes of the board and the parents will bring about respect. Number nine, we need a sanctified spirit. In this thing of being a teacher, in this thing of the authority given to us, in this thing of correcting issues, in this thing of making rules or talking to parents, whatever, a sanctified spirit. Don't make the problem bigger than it is, that we dare not have anger or a temper or revenge. We dare not overreact. We need to give it time and ponder what happened. We dare not assign motives before we hear the whole story. We dare not write people off as hopeless, useless, or no good. We need to be willing to say, I'm sorry. If we overstepped ourselves and we're out of place, that's a sanctified spirit. This point alone will go the farthest in my mind with maintaining respect of any authority, is a sanctified spirit. Well, so your student needs discipline. Something went wrong. What do you do? I have five steps in working through a problem. First of all, is the early preparations that we already talked about. Talking to parents. Every once in a while, a student flat out will like cheat on a test and you didn't see it coming. They were basically good. I don't know. Maybe I'm making an imaginary student, but here you got this bad cheating thing, bam. And nothing really led up to it. You didn't really talk to the parents about it. But most problems that we face in school are habits. There's little things. There's problems. There's struggles. And we should have some early preparations in talking about it. So maybe this child isn't getting his work done and it's a problem. We're ratcheting up the pressure. We should be talking to the parents and preparing the way. Here is a problem we're trying to work with. And maybe it's a character deficiency. They don't take out in recess. They're not honest. We should be talking. There's early preparation that goes into it. And then as an event happens, there's investigation. So what happened? Investigation. Talk to them, but be careful. Be aware of the fact that children can lead you with their answers. They can lead you astray because many of them don't actually want you to conclude that they did wrong. So be careful with questions. As we said earlier, try to see it yourself. Try to have it in your own hands and then tell the child. Tell the child what it is. Tell the child what you saw. And impress that upon them that, listen, I was alert. I saw you. This is what happened. This is the fact that I saw. Now, you might ask some additional questions beyond that, but take control and lay the blame where it rightfully is. And don't let them wiggle and wiggle and wiggle. But listen, here's what happened. Come on. We don't do this in a classroom. And thirdly, we need to weigh the offense. Talked a little bit about that. So we investigated. And now what is this? Is there a difference between carelessness and disobedience? Sometimes children do things without thinking. But sometimes children do things with a worse attitude. There's a difference. And I believe that punishment should reflect some of that difference. Is there a difference between some of these things? How about the first time offense or a repeated offense? What do we do with that? So there's weighing the offense. You know that people and children have a sense of justice somewhat. And they are somewhat of an expectation of what's too much in punishment and what's not enough. It's amazing what sense of, kind of get used to that. We kind of study that growing up as children, what we get spanked for and what we don't get spanked for, and how, and what's right and what's overpunished or underpunished. And so we need to weigh the offense. And so then we weighed the offense, then there's punishment. We, as teachers, you need to know what the school considers acceptable. What are some ways that the school considers acceptable to clear this? How old of a student would you actually spank? And those kind of questions. I remember when I started teaching school, Ivan Martin Jr. told me, he kind of laid it out where the cutoff was age-wise and what you do when you give them a spanking. I remember him telling me that you only ever give them three swats. If you don't get it done with three swats, I'll give you opportunity to do it again. There's some clear direction about what do we do? Don't let children hanging too long in misery, like we talked about. Clear the air and then that's punishment and then release. Punishment and release. A talk afterward, watch for a clear heart, an open face. Don't hold it against them. Now, sometimes a child has an ongoing problem. So here you corrected a little for this and then you corrected a little more and this problem keeps on. And so this is the third offense. May you say, look, you did this two times before. Now this is, you may reflect on some of that, but don't hinge today's punishment on those two because those two should have been cleared. It's all right to say, look, Johnny, you remember we talked about this twice and now here we are. This is what happened. And then focus on that right there and what you're going to have to clear. It is true that this is an ongoing problem that apparently these other didn't work, but this is where we're at. Instead of a filling up a cup of iniquity and holding it against them. And then a foundation for the future. So there's this punishment, there's this release. And now what kind of commitment, especially older children, what kind of commitment? What are you going to do in the future? I want to be honest. Help them to maybe make that statement. Foundation for the future. Some communication with the parents about what happened. And what are the parents doing about this? A foundation for the future that we are not alone in this. We're not overlooking it. We're not overcorrecting. We're working on this. And if it comes up again, we hope it doesn't, but if it comes up again, we know where we're at. We know what's going on. Well, you know, that whole subject is a whole lot easier talked about than done. You know full well as parents, it doesn't go that smoothly. You know that the things that I talked about are really ideal. But it's something that it should be our goal. It should be our goal as churches and as schools and as Bible schools to administrate for the children growing up in our settings, to administrate in such a way that they grow up with respect and learn to love the Lord. Not all of them will. Some will be under a wrong influence and will make some bad choices. But it ought to be our goals that we have done everything that we know how to do to teach them the love of the Lord Jesus Christ and to pattern their lives and turn their feet toward God and spare them from a lot of bad influences and memories, that as they go on in their walk with God, they can be useful in His kingdom. May the Lord bless.